Banyagani, everyone. This is Professor Amon Ra at the Conscious Corner, along with Joe Hembrick, who will be joining us shortly as a co-host. And we want to thank Brother Rashiki Maskani and formerly Brother Regal Moore for providing us this platform to discuss critical issues that affect us as an African people in America. And that's a very important thing. That we critique the news, critique the various theories and social science perspectives of us as a people, and try to make sense out of it, make it relevant to our ongoing thrust toward our liberation, our protection, and our role as Black men and women in this society. So we want to thank those that have chimed in, and we're going to get right into some serious questions about us as a people and what we've been going through, because there have been some major activities going on in the hells of North America that we need to discuss. And try to get an analysis of and see what lessons have been learned. Now, we all heard about the shooting in Buffalo, and we all heard about the issues of abortion, and we all have heard about other issues that we face as Black people with regards to our treatment here, our historical treatment, and our contemporary treatment here. So we're going to start off talking about the lessons that we could take away from the Buffalo massacre of Black people in Buffalo, New York, at the top supermarket by this racist Caucasian who drove 200 miles and shot 13 people, 10 of them Black, 10 of them that was shot and killed and murdered. So to get started, we're gonna start with Brother Mashinda. Mashinda, what do you think of some lessons we could take from that experience?
Well, I mean, when I first heard about it, you know, it, like all the rest of the shooting, you know, it's a tragic situation. You know, it's just, but as far as the shooter goes, you know, hey, it's a lot of people like that in this, you know, in the United States, in this world, that want to kill Black people. You know, so that's just, you know, how do, you know, what do we take from it? You know, you better, there's different perspectives, I guess. I guess part of mine is, you know, you got to protect yourself, you know, as much as possible. You got to be more vigilant, pay attention to what's going on. But like you say, you know, you in a store, you know, shopping, you know, you don't know who's going to run up. So I don't know. It's an issue. I mean, stores and malls and things are wide open, but I don't think you're going to change the minds of the people, the type of people that do that kind of tragedy. You know that kill folks, go look for Black people. You know, write nigga on his gun and targeted Black people. You know, it's like you know, in their mind. You know, so I don't know. I don't. It's I'm just trying to keep my eyes open, you know, because I really don't know. I don't really have a solution to that, you know. I mean, on a personal level. But as far as the United States, I don't think that their goal, I mean, unless they, the government, you know, that, you know, I don't think they have a, well, there are some. There's a lot of people who are, like, against those automatic weapons and things like that. So it's a, you know, Second Amendment issue that they want to bring up. So it's all over the place, but you know, I don't know. It's, I mean, I have my personal thoughts, and again, I don't know why you would need, you know, AK-47s and Uzis and all that kind of stuff, you know, in your home and to protect yourself. You know, I mean, there's other ways to protect yourself, but so I'm still trying to digest that, and but I don't know. I hate to say it, but the world is kind of desensitized, you know, on these kind of things. You know, I mean, I don't hear anybody at work talking about it or in the community, you know, like, say, wow, did you hear what happened? You know, a couple of conscious folks might But, you know, I normally would bring it up, you know, but people aren't even talking about it, you know. I think my wife, you know, she was watching something on TV about the shootings. You know, I was kind of tied up to that. She was watching something on TV, and she just was like, you know, talking about the 80-something-year-old man and the man, somebody had fought cancer and different things, and, you know, and then you get took out in the supermarket, you know. So, I don't know. It's just tragedy, man. And I don't know. Maybe I'll think of something. But those are my thoughts right now. It's just that, we got to keep our eyes open and, go from there. I don't think we have a lot of support when it comes to, like, different police departments and things like that. You know, nobody's, you know, I think they glorify, you know, the guy, you know, they always, you know, when these guys kill, in this guy's case, you know, he didn't get killed. They didn't shoot him or anything like that. He threatened to kill himself, I believe. And, but the news, you know, they want to know all about him, you know. It's like, but again, the people that got killed, you know, people are more talking about when the fact that, you know, the families that are suffering and things like that, you know, just talking about what's recorded in the media. So the media has an influence on how people think, you know. If they make it a state of emergency and talk about it on another level, then maybe, you know, people, you know, something will get done in terms of, you know, the masses getting involved. You know, and there are people that are fighting. You know, I often hear you say this on the podcast where there are some people that they are, and there are, you know, we are. People are fighting different battles at different levels that, you know, all the time. But if collectively, you know, it's kind of a, you know, that unity is not there, you know, overall, like back in certain times in history where we were, you know, much closer and more, you know, and moved as a unit, you know. So, but anyway, those are my thoughts for right now.
As is home in New York, at the subsequent Valley school district, high school. He threatened to do some mass killing and commit suicide. And they didn't report it to the police. They interviewed him, sent him to a mental evaluation for a day and a half, then let him back in school. And one of the people in his hometown was interviewed and said, well, you know, they should have done more to help him and that the system failed him. And it's like he was a victim, you know, of the system. How do you feel about that, that argument?
Well, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, this guy is a clone of something else. You know, we go back to white supremacy, you know, Germany, Nazi Germany, extermination. So, you know, all these ideologies that they subscribe to, these young children. So, I mean, you know, nobody's, you know, mind in the store. Nobody, you know, the kid, again, I don't know his parents. You know, I don't know, you know, if he was a latchkey kid. I don't really know about him. But, you know, from my experience, though, white, black, Mexican, a lot of them, they are victims. They are firsthand victims. And I've known young skinheads and things like that who actually gave me respect in my presence, you know, that kind of thing. And I tell you, although they carry out that, you know, they carry out certain, it's like, you know, it's like gangs, you know, somebody go around and do a drive-by and shoot at me and miss me and hit the old lady across the street, that kind of thing. You know, so I'm saying it's you know, why, you know, the whole across the spectrum. Yeah, they're victims. They are, I mean, but you know, he's 18 years old, he's adult, you know, he knows right from wrong. And so he consciously carried out, he got an answer to that. Don't get me wrong, you know, he's got the answer to that and be dealt with. And but you know, is he a victim? I'm sure he is. At some point in his life, you know, there was a breakdown somewhere, you know. And I'm not saying, you know, he had everything, the rich folks, you know, he didn't have that to do. Obviously he had a mental issue. Something going on when you when you get into that, you know, that hateful mindset, you know, nobody, you know, was anybody there? Maybe it was, you know, someone there trying to tell them that, you know, but they say social media and today's generations and the world we live in, it's tough, you know. You know, back in the day, you could talk to young kids and you know, if you know, there, you know, they, during, you know, in our neighborhoods, extended family, you know, everybody, you know, had an influence. But nowadays, you know, you try to say something to somebody's kid, you might have some problems. You know, the kid might turn on you and shoot you. It happens, you know. So I don't know where he came from other than basically, like, say, New York and that kind of thing.
Yeah, rural, I don't know what kind of upbringing. I'm trying to understand, you know, when they say that he should have gotten more treatment, but they didn't report it to the police. They just sent him for a psychological evaluation for a day and a half. Should the people that Emmett Till get a psychological evaluation? Should the people that participated in the lynchings of Black people?
No, it's so late in the game. I mean, when you can kill somebody, no. If you threatening somebody to kill, you know, I'm going to go blow up the school and kill people and then I'm going to kill myself. Yeah, somebody need to deal with, you know. I mean, he's making these threats. If he hasn't killed anybody yet, maybe. You know, maybe there is some help out there for him. I don't know, but I'm just saying. Okay. Yeah, but I mean, no. But as far as he done murdered folks and all that kind of stuff, that's a whole nother level. He done took it to another level. But he should have had some kind of intervention. You know, but there's not a lot of that. You gotta have a lot of money, and then you gotta be willing to go to the intervention. You know, so
he was smart enough to write 180 page. Manifesto about white replacement and borrowing from this New Zealand murderer. He was smart enough to get a video camera. He was smart enough and sane enough to get armor to wear. And so this whole concept that, you know, first of all, there may be a situation where the psychologist said it's normal for you to hate, for you to kill Black people. I mean, that's normal for them because they do it so often and even kill themselves. But my point is that to the history of this country, as Malcolm would always say, and his birthday's coming up on May 19th, that this system blames the victim, turn the victim into the criminal and the criminal into a victim. And now they're trying to say that this murderer of a Black person, even a young man that went into the church and shot those people. They was all, he got mental problems. I remember Ricky Sanders in the Big Boy killings. He was a brother, and he went into Big Boys off of La Cienega hamburger stand to rob it, and he put the people in the freezer and shot them. And then they put him on trial and found out that he had smoked sherm and took drugs all that day, but they wouldn't give him no diminished capacity. They said, no, ain't nothing wrong with you. You know, he shermed up, smoked all day. And then Jared Lee Amy was walking in Oakland on the railroad track. These white boys said, let's go hunt some critters. And Jared and Amy was walking on the tracks and they pulled up and they said, stop, nigga, stop, nigga. And Jared and Amy never stopped. He kept walking. They shot him in the back and killed him. Then when they arrested him, they searched their car and found a bunch of beer cans. Just empty beer cans, a couple six packs. And they say, oh, they got diminished capacity. They were drunk. These were white people. And you look the story up. And my point is that, you know, it's like what's going on with the the January 6th insurrection, where these guys are getting 6 months and 3 months in jail and not charged with all the charges they would put on a black person, from burglary to violation of federal laws, this, that, and this, and that. When we go to court, we have to plead guilty to keep them getting 100 years, so that we only get 10 or 15. Whereas these people, they plead guilty. And some went to trial. And after the trial, the judge still didn't give them the maximum sentence because they were white. You know, I'm just trying to show you the parallel that, you know, European, they're crazy when they do something, but we sane and just terrible people that need to be exterminated. And this guy had a motive. It was called, he believed in theory of white replacement. And that's what they were saying in Charlottesville. Jews won't replace us, blacks won't replace us. That's what they were marching, hundreds of them, shouting that. So that's a serious theory that some of these white people believe, that immigration, abortion, you need strict abortion to keep white people just from getting rid of babies and having more babies. You know, we think it's to punish black people who are poor. But the white nationalists said, no, we want a national law saying these white women got to have these babies because minorities are replacing us. But I'll get back to you, Machine, to respond to some of that.
Let me just kind of make a point right quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're right. I worked many years in the system with juveniles in particular. And there's definitely, we're talking about, you know, when they're young, growing up. And I dealt with them from 9 years old all the way to 18, and different, you know, skinheads and racists and gangs and this and that. And the bottom line, yeah, the court, if you don't have any money to get your own psychiatric and psychological evaluation, you get one evaluated by the county. And it's pretty much, they pretty much got it already written up. And most black children, they say that, they're prone to violence, and this, but when I was involved, I used to get an outside opinion, and I had got permission to go ahead and get them from a black psychiatrist to evaluate, you know, the ones, because I think that was part of their social study. When they go to court, you know, they try to give them a disposition where they go, what's going to happen to them, and they use that psychological evaluation to determine, you know, to pretty much give it weight on the disposition or the sentence. And so, but it's few and far between people in there that fight for those young people's justice or getting them help, you know? So yeah, it was a lot of the white kids who were just as so-called bad or whatever, they got a chance. You're right, the court system gives them a chance. You know, it's like white privilege, they give them, you know. But I just wanted to talk about, you know, the discrepancy in that, you know, and if you don't have the money to, but, you know, again, you know, I used to get permission where the counties paid for it, you know, an outside, a second opinion, and kept a lot of young brothers and Hispanics from going down to serious lockups to maybe some more therapeutic options, you know, that kind of thing, which a lot of them did benefit from that, you know. So as they matriculate and grow through this system, they become more violent. They show up at the Capitol in Academ Food. Yeah, that's who they are, you know. But when they were young, they turned into mob. But anyway, they get a pass in a lot of cases, you know. So but I just wanted to interject that.
Well, and then we look at the situation at Delaware State University, the lacrosse team, black girls, was in the bus, and the police pulled the bus over. And then they get on the bus and say to the girls, now, if you got drugs or any paraphernalia that's illegal, tell me now, because if we search you, we find it, we're going to arrest you. So then they commenced to searching them, because no, they didn't have nothing. And they didn't find anything. And they never gave the bus driver a ticket at all. So now they are suing the and demanding an investigation, the president of Delaware State, and things of this nature. But to go in there and assume that there are drugs and guns of the girls of team was the attitude of the officers, that they just knew they was gonna find something, and they didn't find anything. And if the bus driver was driving erratically or in the wrong lane, which they found out he wasn't, why'd you pull him over anyway? And then why are you going to search all their clothes and their bags, their gym bags? And then when you don't find anything, you don't apologize, you don't say nothing other than y'all can go now. I just want you to see the parallel with regards to how the system treats Black children. You know, we're all on deck. I mean, it's every man, woman, and child is Black athletes being involved. Brother Hembrick, how do you respond to some of this?
Well, sure, I made my point clear in the past. We're behind enemy lines, and our people suffer too much from the illusion of inclusion. As far as the Buffalo thing, how can a white boy be riding all around in a Black neighborhood casing stuff out and not get checked? And that school, you know, the boy should have been put out of school. You know, he got all this stuff on the internet. I'm sure government agencies are monitoring. They damn sure monitoring us, probably monitoring us right now. So they're aware. And the police, they just had him on the ground. They ain't rough him up or nothing. I wonder if they took him to get a hamburger, you know, like they did the other sucker before they took him to jail. So, they're all in cahoots, and we need to wake up to the fact that they are and be extra diligent in our observations. And as far as doing something about it, there's been plenty of things in past history that have shown what our people have done. I mentioned the Mau Mau several times. We can take lessons from Spook Set by the Door. We need to gather in our youngsters who are out doing the same. We're not even dodging white folks. We're dodging some of our own folks. And, you know, their mindset need to be change to see what's happening to us as a people globally. And, we need to try to get something together. In the history of the United States, the only time a white person was put to death, I don't care how many Black people they killed, it was that Jasper, Texas thing, maybe a couple of decades ago. That's the only time in the history of the country that a white person was put to death for no matter how many Black people they killed. And, until some things happen, we need to, like one of the first lessons I got coming up, it's better to have it not needed than to need it not have it. And whenever you see enough, you know, just take for instance that white boy in Buffalo. He gets out the car, he got full body armor on with a helmet. damn, they ain't got no cameras in the store seeing what, you know, we definitely have to be more diligent in terms of watching out what's going on around us. But I don't know, this old white boy will probably go to the pen. He gonna be a hero to the skinheads and all of that. And that's about it. But you know, they're all, matter of fact, when they was taking him to jail, police might have been saying, hey, man, did a good job. He probably should have got several more of them, you know, ain't no telling, but we need to wake the hell up. I know that. And but even in Compton, I used to say, you know, it's dangerous for black people to walk around, but any white person can walk from one end to another and nothing really ever happened to them. You know, that's our mindset is all warped. But it's just one more of many that have occurred. And
how do you feel, Joe, about the fact that he's 18, but 2 years ago in 2020, his dad bought him a shotgun. And he had that shotgun with him. He killed the people with the AR-15, which they say he bought legally, but they don't say what year he bought it. And and so he had two other guns with him, and said that if they didn't catch him, he was gonna drive up and down the street and shoot more. And written on some of the guns, you know, nigger and this and that and that. But what is your feeling about his parents' role? And, you know, they keep saying he was radicalized on the internet, but he may have been radicalized in his mom and daddy house. Well, if you call it radicalism, I don't. I just call it white, some white folks being white folks. But go ahead.
Well, you know,
I mean, he had to be 16 when they gave him a shotgun.
Let me just say this, you know, an apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. And it doesn't surprise me about parents buying them weapons. I remember back in the 80s when I was in the classroom teaching over in Linwood and ran into these articles about all these youngsters down in the Southeast, white folks, white boys, who were receiving, you know, military training, you know, out in the woods and all of that. At the time, that white racist groups were at an all-time high.
Yeah, militias. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, they know they are becoming a minority. They're trying to hold on. So they're going to do whatever they can do by any means necessary to keep their place here in this, well, in the Western world, actually. And the government won't pass no gun control stuff, you know, although that ain't gonna stop a whole lot. But until some of them, I don't know, what does it take some folks to, you know, to pull a mile on you know, some white racist group and smoke a bunch of them? I don't know. Is it time for the Elijah Muhammad zebra thing? There's all kind of things in the past that have occurred, but this keeps on happening and nothing, the response to me isn't satisfactory. But, you know, I wonder how many guns his daddy got. If you buy your son a shotgun at 16, how many damn guns you got? You know what I mean? So, like I say, apple don't fall too far from the tree. And just like Malcolm said, you know, quit talking about the South. As long as you're south of the doggone Canadian border, you're south.
Yeah. What do you think about this great replacement theory? White folks think that immigration and black people and Mexicans and Asians are going to take over the country, and this country was built for white people, or what they call American born people. Even they don't count the Native American.
You know? place in the original, you know, natives and Africans that was here. They done did it already themselves, but you know, they know their numbers are slim. They see Congress taking on, you know, color other than white. And this puts kind of a fear in them. That's the reason for white flight and school segregation and the whole nine. They is very few that even give a thought to even finding out what kind of people that they're hating against. You know, and I don't commend the brother that lost his life, the security guy in Buffalo. You know, he was trying to take him down, but the armor that the dude had on, matter of fact, the brother security guard shot him a couple of times, but that armor he was wearing. Now, what is an 18-year-old kid doing with armor like that? You know what I mean? People see these signs of this stuff going on, and, you know, they're all in cahoots. I mean, they're down with it. They probably ain't got the heart to do it and take a crazy fool like this boy, but the kids he went to school with said he was talking about that stuff way back when he was in school. So somebody got to know, and you're going to let him purchase some weapons and own weapons? It's just ridiculous. So, you know, we better be about protecting ourselves. Like I said, ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun, and we rabbits getting took out in all seasons. So until we kind of respond to some of that, might take a few of us, you know, kind of getting took out, you know, just like Malcolm said, if you know you got to go, make it even, Steven. You know what I'm saying? But it's a shame, you know, we kind of fear for our families and loved ones. And I try to teach mine all the time what to do in event that they hear that. Get down. Don't run. Get down on the ground and crawl and roll. You stand up, that's how you get caught by them bullets. But I don't know, man. You know, seem like people pay attention. They can see this stuff happening and alert someone.
Well, he took some excerpts from this manifesto that was written in New Zealand, where this white boy went in and shot 50 Muslims and killed them. And he used some of his writing. And that white boy in New Zealand filmed the killing too. He even had a camera on his body, filming it live so that... And a part of the manifesto that was written in New Zealand talked about tactics, how to kill minorities, especially. You know, it's like, this is what you can do, it's how you divert this, and gave instructions. and he was into that. But anyway, Roger T, what do you think?
Well, I was just wondering if there was security at the place. And what Joe said, they did have security. So, man, what more can you do?
A retired policeman has been there. He's been retired about 15 years, and that was another job he was doing.
And yeah, so...
security, retired chair.
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking. You know, you have to have security at establishments. And, you know, yeah, Joe said.
They had security, they killed him.
That's what I'm saying. You know, that was my thoughts. You know, you have to have security, but evidently he had more. it's ridiculous. That's all. It's ridiculous. You can see the disparities with when a white person kills other people and how they're treated. You know, it's like, you know, they become down low heroes. You know, we have a long way to go in getting the mindset where we. Now, that's almost impossible right there to defend that unless you have tactical units yourself that recognize, okay, we have somebody here that's very dangerous, and you know, you got to have just as much or more than them to stop something like that. So yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow when you keep hearing the same thing over and over again. And I mean, Joe is hitting it on the nose when he say, you know, we gotta have defense, but we under their tutelage, we in their jail cells. We in jail and not even, you know, man, it's mind boggling. Joe and Machinda, and you said enough, Rob, for me to
let me just say this.
Man,
in Louisiana, at this school called Sid Trippett or something, elementary school, there's a young black kid with mental issues. The school knew he had mental issues. So he hit the principal and threw a trash can through a window. The police came. The police wrestled this little kid to the ground, handcuffs him and sits on him. And he's an elementary kid. Wouldn't let his parents talk to him. And, you know, they proceeded to arrest him. What I want to know is, here's a white boy, like the one in Aurora, as Joe was pointing out in Machinda. He goes in the theater and shoots everybody. Then when he comes out, they don't shoot him. You know, the Latino kid running, he gets shot in the back. The brother, Michael Brown, hands up, he gets shot in the back. Cops say he thought he was a threat. The same thing with these issues of how they treat black people. To kneel on George Floyd's neck and won't let him get no help. My point is, I'm not trying to be the dead horse. Everybody knows the system is racist, but this replacement theory is not just among people with mental issues. They're congressmen and talk shows pushing this theory. Carlson on one of those Fox News, number of congressmen and this Congress lady, she's saying, you know, that's what they want immigration in, to replace, you know, the move, the liberal agenda. The whole concept of that, the big lie about Trump lost because they cheated in black areas where black people voted. Even though some of the white people on the same ticket won, but Trump lost, they still said the election was a fraud, and they still saying. Now, they haven't even mentioned that this kid went across, he was still in New York. He drove 200 miles. Another theory and a practice of white racism, white nationalism, to save the white race, wrote 180-page manifesto. And then Joe was saying, when they arrested him, he came out, he had the gun to his neck, they say. Then they talked him out of it, and then they arrested him. But there was no roughnecking him or mistreating him as far as on camera. They haven't released, if the store had cameras, And I'm surprised that the only, that they haven't released his footage. They arraigned him the same day on one count of murder because they had to investigate to get all the data together. They said they're going to charge him with a hate crime as well as some other kind of crime to make it federal. They don't have a death penalty in New York. So he's looking at life without parole if he's found guilty. Everyone is crying. We need to hang our head in shame. This is a dark day for America. How could something like this happen when it happens every day? I just wanted to get some feedback on this replacement theory. And have any of you seen it go further than just Buffalo as far as the mentality of these whites that's voting for a cat like Trump, who practiced this theory? He told that there were good people in Charlottesville who was yelling that Jews and blacks won't replace us. And and his other racist policies. And people think that it's a cult, whereas it's about white power. And Mashinda was saying, he witnessed white privilege, but what Mashinda is also saying is someone had to give them the privilege. So that means white power. So, it's not just a situation where I feel better than somebody else or I'm getting treated better than someone else. It's about power to do it, and so we have to look at that. And especially this white girl wrote a book called Bring the War Home, the movement and radical of militias and white nationalism, or white supremacy. That's the title of the book, Bring the War Home. And she outlines in the book that these groups, and even Eric Holder and some of the previous presidents have said, one of the biggest threats is domestic terrorism, as they call it. So, Mashinda, you want to respond to any of those things I just talked about? Are you still there, Mashinda?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Any particular point? I mean, you covered a lot. Yeah,
one thing you got to agree, and as Joe always say, the illusion of inclusion. But we're like many black nationalists say, and I agree with them. You may not be at war, but you're definitely in war. But we don't train our kids. As Joe said, he trains his, that you're in a war zone. The war. Malcolm said the battle line is everywhere. Wherever black people is, it's a battle line. So, but go ahead, Mashinda.
Excuse me, Mashinda. Can I chime in here right quick?
Yes, sir.
Because Raw, your initial question that you asked was about the replacement theory. And let me just point this out. These Europeans know that, their numbers are low as far as globally. And they know that their sperm bank is running low. That's the reason why they're coming out, trying to ban abortion, because they don't want no more white babies killed. And as far as immigration goes, to show their point, what black people do they let in this country? I bet you 500,000 Ukrainians probably getting ready to come over here.
Already.
And there's a bunch of them here already before the war even started, so you know they're giving them love. But they won't let one Haitian in the United States of America. And the West Africans that do come, you know, they drill them so much at the Statue of Liberty about, don't you fool with them African Americans once we let you in here. They tell them that when they're going through the immigration thing to get here. But that revolutionary spirit of them Haitians, not one has been allowed in here out of all the travesties they've gone through and all the stuff, because they whooped some white folks, but you know, and war in the past. So all of these things, you know, culminates into this replacement thing, and with all of the internet stuff that's out there through the all them different groups, like with January 6th and all of that. These people really believe this stuff. But what needs to happen here, we need to unite with the people of color that are here in order to have a chance. And I really think the brown and blacks can do it. I don't know if the Asians even want to get involved, but after that, you know, these white folks are doing a lot of stuff to them too now. But they don't like us too much either. And, you know, these groups of color need to have some kind of power. I know back in the 60s, all those groups kind of merged together. It was the Asian group, the Brown Berets, and the Panthers and all that. They were kind of coming together. And that's the only way I see us having a chance to be observant enough and, you know, kind of have ourselves prepared for these things, you know, when they occur, because they really fear, I'm not talking about the Europeans, all of the, you know, illegal immigration that's coming in here through the Latinos and all of that. And I got some friends that are totally opposed to that. And I tell them all the time, these people coming back to take, you know, to take their land back. You look at all the names of the cities, the streets, and all that, and those are Latino names. Now, those that can go deeper in history know that the Africans were here first, you know, and foremost. But, you know, people don't want to think about that. Like these Native Americans that they just wiped out. He's a gangster, and he know through his religion, no matter what he do, he think he being forgiven, because you know the book that they go by say you can commit 7 times 70 sins a day and be forgiven. That's what the book say. That's why the mafia, no matter how many they kill, they go to the church and get some holy water thrown on, say some Hail Marys, and as far as religious belief goes, you know, they think they cool. It's all right. That right there has us with our head in the sky looking for relief from all of this from up there, which ain't gonna never happen. Hate for all you Christians and mothers that's listening. You're gonna be waiting because it ain't coming. But anyway, I just wanted to address that replacement issue, Brother Mashinda, and pardon me for, you know, busting in. I just wanted to address that while I was on my mind. So now you can take it, brother.
You kind of shared what I was getting ready to say. You know, like I used to say, like last call for alcohol. You know, it's you know, they know they're in the 11th hour. You know, the party's over. The population's dwindling, you know. And, you know, I was listening to a podcast with Shannon Sharp and Michael Blackston, the comedian. So you got Shannon Sharp, the football player. I don't know if you ever seen his little podcast. But he, you know, anyway, he had the comedian Michael Blackston. I'm not a big Michael Blackston. I'm not any of them major fan, but, you know, I just listen to dialogue and things. Anyway, Blackston, you know, he was basically, you know, showing some of his serious side. You know, he's always going to be a comedian, I guess. But the point is, he's from Ghana. And he was saying that, you know, his family moved to Philly. And so they mother wasn't making a lot of money and stuff and this and that. He got bullied when he came over here. But the point I was making, when he said when he came up, when he, you know, made his first deal and made some money, I guess he's worth about $3 or $4 million now. You know, at least you look up the net worth. But the point is, let him say it, you know, he's made it. He says he got, you know, he's not big time rich, but he's got money. And so he was saying he started to try to get his family over here. And it's hard. He said, man, it's hard to get us, you know, they don't let Africans come over, you know, just, you know, over every day. Just, you know, they get a visa. You know, you got to have a reason why you're coming. And like, you got to have a return date, so to speak. This was Blackson was saying in his personal experience with his family. He was saying he was trying to get them over from Ghana. And they checked the African, like you say, at the checkpoint. You know, it's like, do you have a baby over here? You have a wife over here? Do you have business over here? What is it? Why are you coming over here? That kind of thing. Whereas, you know, the Europeans, they flow in free flow. It's the European nations, you know, I mean, in modern, you know, the modern day so-called European, you know, of course, history, we can talk history where in ancient times, but as we know it, as far as the slave trade and the whole building of the United States, the empire of the United States, they don't want no Africans, you know, because the African would bring over the diet. You know, you talk about the diet, you know, the metaphysics and the, you know, the vegetables and things like that. You've been saying it, you know, let's get back to, you know, and so what happens is when you, it's going to affect that the pharmaceutical, you know, you get people like Dr. Sebi and Dr. Goss, you know, brothers that might, you know, that have influence from ancestors, you know, they know they pass, you know, they it's kind of like passing it on. And I remember going to Dr. Goss and man, this seemed like we was hiding almost sometime with like on a Tuesday or Thursday night, we'd be at his building and we'd be, you know, I'd sitting up, you know, be about maybe 10 of us listening to some health tips and some other things regarding, you know, what's going on. And, but he's always had, I'm just speaking of Dr. Goss, had a mystique about him and a kind of a, you know, low key persona about him because he knows, just like Dr. Sebi, you know, they know that the government, you know, is like, man, it's like you opening up if we all get together and open up a big supermarket or a distribution center, Walmart gonna have a problem with us, you know, we get to expanding because we spend trillions of dollars and we wake up. So that's what it's about, is divide and conquer. You know, the Willie Lynch letter, you know, it's been debated, like you say, you know, whether it's real or not. It's like, you know, it's a lot of things that I might not can prove if it's real or not, but it makes a lot of sense in terms of like the separation and the divide and conquer spelled out really well. And you can see it. It's empirical. Well, you can see it right before you that it's like people hate against each other. You know, I know some real conscious dudes, but then they talk about, they vote for Trump because Trump is against, or this one's against abortion, or this one's against. Well, you have a right, you know, you might not be for abortion. You know, you might, you know, if your girl gets pregnant, you might, you know, say, hey, I'm gonna go ahead and hold my responsibility. And yeah, I want to keep my kid. It's probably how I would think. But, you know, again, women, you know, I'm not a woman. And so I'm not going to, you know, until we examine that and really be fair about it, I'm not going to get involved as a man into that conversation, legislated and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I'm just saying the rules are, of course, one-sided. It's not an equal playing field. It never was. And we got to be some serious warriors to just be standing here talking about it. You know, I mean, we don't give up, you know, not that we're looking for credit, but I don't need none. But I mean, seriously, you know, to be able to maintain, you know, Professor Ra, you know, things you've done over your time and, you know, speaking up. I know I speak up in times like, man, I'm risking my job, you know, because I'm shedding light on something, you know. Oh, it's tough, you know. So anyway, I'm just saying, yeah, they are in very in tune, more than we are, way more than we are, that their population is dwindling and it's global. And, you know, it's like, hey, it's their last time, you know. So I don't know. I hope they don't start dropping nuclear bombs and all that kind of stuff, you know, to try to, you know, use that as a, you know, it's a war situation. Next thing you know, you think that young white dude went to the supermarket to blow up something. Hell, if they start a war or a race war or whatever, they kick it off, you know, hey, it's open season, you know. So I don't know. It's pretty deep, you know. I know what my wife is talking about, you know, getting a gun. I know it's pretty deep, you know, because she's never really talked about that. But she's like, hey, I might have to get, you know, just because of the order of the day. It's becoming more and more prevalent. It's becoming more, you know, people with the media, the social media, it's becoming more pronounced and people are, but we're asleep as a whole. I deal with people every day and people are dead, literally. I mean, well, I'll just say they're asleep, like a computer. It's not turned off, but you got to shake the mouse to wake up the computer. You know, when you hit your keyboard or your mouse, they're asleep. And that's it. It's unfortunate. So I'm constantly trying to awake, trying to shake. I'm shaking the mouse. I'm trying to wake them up, you know, and that's all we can do. And that's it. But it's, I don't know. It's deep. It's way bigger than me. So that's it.
What about you, Roger Key? Any comment? You're on mute.
Yeah, I was away for a second. Educate, realize what we're in, and I think everybody here know, and if we could pass on some of the information that we're you know putting out here for people to know that you're like Hembrick said, you're behind enemy lines, you're in a war, and need to educate, need to get better than what we are. And then we could better address what to do about it. Because it's mind-boggling how we have a group of people who just neglect to know that we are in a position we're in and not do nothing about it. And then want to be a part of the whole scheme of things. Oh, it's ridiculous, man. Anybody that can see what's going on need to stay clear of what they do and how they do things and do something way different. So, you know, I took part in that. And I'm doing stuff way different than what I used to do. I used to be a full participant in Bobby Lyon Ministry. Not anymore. So it's just ridiculous. You know, it's slavery. Just we get released from slavery in 1865, around that time. And then things have not changed. It's just been manipulated. Rod, you mentioned all of this disparities in how we're treated and how they're treated when a crime is committed. It's crazy. You know, it's blatant slavery. Still, it has not left. And I don't see how people can think that, you know, just because you go kick it. Yeah, you can go kick it, but leave and get stopped by the police and let them leave and go get stopped by the police. A whole different scenario is going to happen. Wake up. That's what you got to wake up and see what's going on and be in total disagreement and do something totally different than what we're doing as people.
Yeah,
that's my position.
We have to rebuild an overarching movement like we had in the 60s. And like many Black people had through the history of our struggle for justice and humane treatment. C.T. Vivian, who was a part of the Civil Rights Movement, they went up in Alabama to vote, and the policeman swung on him and hit him in the face. And CT just looked at him and said, what kind of people are y'all? Hate people that have done nothing to you. And so, you know, that's the type of people they are. When people show you who they are, believe them, as the poet said. You know, even though we have some brothers and sisters that marry them, that's a personal relationship. We're talking about political and cultural struggle and physical struggle. I ain't against brothers who marry whoever they want. They can marry a horse. I wouldn't care. Yeah. I ain't no bedroom watcher. You know, but at the same time, I got to question your mentality. You know, I mean, personally, you know, where's your mind? How you marry the slave master daughter? How do you even find them attractive or sexual? You know, here's a woman who was a correction officer of 17 years. And this white boy convinced her into helping him escape. Or she proposed it to him. What difference does it make? It got away for a couple of weeks and rendezvoused. Then she killed herself rather than face the humiliation after they get caught. I just want to explain that we as people, we must, as Dr. Coringa teaches, and I agree, education, mobilization, organization, and then confrontation equals transformation. So many, as you say, Rashiki, of our people, they're not even paying attention to what's going on and want to know why they got hit by a race bus. You know, and got, you know, you walk, you know, you teach kids to, you know, look both ways before you cross the street. You know, pay attention to where you're walking. And it's a challenge to get people to be focused and stay focused. I mean, I've taught for 34 years and, you know, I taught hard and some of the people were so black in the class and so black in my office and so black on campus. Then when they got out of college, they straightened their hair, put on some skin lightener, and just became a collaborator in their own oppression. I can't criticize them, that's their choice, because we've always had collaborators. But we victims. We are injured physicians, and we are taught in Kawi'ita, with the capacity to heal ourselves. And so our struggle is a continuous struggle. But pay attention to what's going on. This, we sit and voter suppression has always been with us. That's where the 3/5 came from. Black people outnumbered white people in the South. And they say only 3/5 of them could vote. Because they had the majority. They outnumbered the whites. They had so many black people that they had enslaved and after emancipation. And not emancipation, after they struggled to get free, won the right to vote in the 14th Amendment. They came up with this 3/5. Why? Because they want to stay in power. And the same thing with this replacement theory and these abortion laws and these other things. So we have to pay attention. And hopefully this platform will educate people, as Rashi keeps saying. And it's great to have great minds like Brother Embry Brother Mashenda is a good doctor when he was here to discuss these issues and to put them out there. Because so many of our people, as Joe would say, are locked up in a religion that the European then used as a whip to continue, as Roger P. stated, slavery by lashing our backs with religion, forcing it on us through a ridiculous ideology that you're gonna fly away without an airline ticket. It don't make no sense. You know, that's spiritual talk. You know, that's not physical talk, science talk. But I mean, it's a hell of a story. That when you die, you don't die. If you profess Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, Muhammad as your God, or Jehovah as your God, and that you see your relatives in the by and by be greeted at heaven's gate. But what can you say? I mean, people want to believe that. I'm not saying that organized religion doesn't have good things. Some of them do good things. Feed the poor, have child care, provide health and education and programs. And that's okay. I like that. That's what makes me be a part of it when they're doing things to help the people. But when they doing it for the gospel of prosperity and the collaboration of polarizing our people so that they don't act, I have a problem. It seems like every minister and every church will be contributing to our liberation and our struggle and our consciousness. There's some ministers that do it, but many of them, they're on a whole different level. And some educators who won't speak truth to the kids in classes such as world history, geography, science, and even certain aspects of math. They should be able to teach our kids sacred knowledge, have a language of liberation, a language of victorious spirit that we can win. As long as you're fighting, Brother Baba Atili said, we're winning. We're winning when we have a say we lost or gave up. So Raj, to you, unless somebody have any other comments, you can wrap it up, Raj.
Yeah, I just got one more comment to make. You know, it's be agreed upon, you know, that we've been in war for the last 3,000 years. But the thing that gets us mind offset from what's happening is a whole lot of partying. And to quote Francis Cress Welsing, who has time to party when you at war? Now you think them Ukrainians over there partying now while them bombs are being dropped on them? No. And I never experienced it myself, but I heard back in the 60s how Bunchy Carter and some of the Panther members would be at parties and they would ask him to cut the music off for about 20, 30 minutes or so. And he would stand up on something to speak, running down the condition of our people and what we need to do about it. Because that's where you're going to catch most of us at. It's either going to be at church or it's going to be at the party. So maybe that's a tactic that those that know can kind of recreate, you know, out there in them social settings. I remember I did it one time. I was at a barbecue and I was just running it down. And this sister was sitting next. She got, oh, you scared me, you scared me. And she got up and left because she couldn't take what I was saying. I was talking about the King Alfred plan and all of that kind of stuff and what they have planned for us, which is a part of National Security Council documentation. They got a plan in 8 hours to get rid of us, just like they did the Japanese. Do it while we're at a party or a barbecue, because they know when them holidays come up, they know exactly what we're going to be doing and where we're going to be at. So anyway, I just want to end my comments tonight on that. And Brother Mashinda, when you were talking about the people's mindset, I call them the walking dead, because that's who they are, the walking dead. So anyway, good show tonight. Look like Sasha getting a little excited. So I'm going to mute myself so I don't mess up the program. Peace.
Yeah, I'm glad Brother Hembree mentioned that, because that's one of the things that I had to let go, the foolishness. And I love reggae music, and reggae music in its essence is a music with a message. So I can vibe to some reggae music because it's revolutionary. It's spiritual upliftment and information that's constructive. And that's the only thing that I would like the Marleys is coming in June, on June 10th. You got Stephen and Skip Marley. And they're people who, you know, uphold the Bob Marley message. That's the son and grandson. And Bob was a revolutionary. So I mean, if you're gonna do some partying, it should be something of substance, and you shouldn't be drunk and high out of your mind. So it's I'm glad Hembree mentioned that, because we have to start looking at a different way of doing things. And that's, if you're gonna party, make sure it's constructive partying, if that's such a thing. So I'm glad he mentioned that. All right, Ron.
Mashinda, any closing comments?
Well, I just listening tonight, I thought about Brother Dr. Bobby E. Wright, you know, Psychopathic Racial Personality. You know, one of the books, I bought the book years ago, man, little pamphlet, little essay. And
Bobby Wright. You
know, yeah, and menticide, you know. You know, breaking down, you know, psychological racial warfare, you know, and it's deep. You know, he's the black brother, clinical psychologist. You know, he died when he was, I guess, about to be the president of the Black Clinicians or the Black Psychology Association or whatever. But anyway, I thought the brother was, you know, like I say, it's been many people, including Brother Wright, who brought information to the forefront. We're trying to do that, listening. I'm learning still and trying to contribute in my daily life. You know, like Brother Rasa Key said, you know, it starts with yourself first, you know, and how we conduct ourselves, and so we can influence others, you know, people in our path. You know, we're not going to save the world. You know, I'm not a pessimist. You know, my glass is half full, but at the same time, I'm a realist. And I think it's late in the game. It's a little late in the game. And I'm telling you, it's I don't know. I don't see people. I think, you know, if people don't wake up, like I say, they'll see this shift that's going on. You know, I'm just saying, it's a lot going on. They're going to be left behind, you know. So, but anyway, we'll continue to do what we need to do. And y'all have a good evening.
All right. I just want to. Can you hear me, Rachidi?
Yeah.
I just want to thank everyone for chiming in. And thank you for your comments. And thank you for your wealth of knowledge and drawing from your experience and your studies to bring truth to the people and people to the truth. All right, Brother Rachidi, close us on out.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Professor Rob, for being consistent, and Brother Mashinda and Brother Hembree, consistent with with bringing out this information, because it's very pertinent and very important that it's heard. And, you know, and I know it's being heard. It's just right now it's on the radar. And hopefully people are making some changes in their life and being encouraged by what's being brought forth. So on Wednesday, we got Brother Thomas coming back. Brother Thomas is coming back, and we had an interesting conversation when I was visiting his school maybe about a month ago. And I think what he spoke about was so important. I said, you have to do a show on it. So it's right here. It's how to protect Black male and female relationships being on a code with a dress code. And I don't want to, you know, tell what he was talking about, because I want him to bring it out on Wednesday. And I think it's going to be a very good discussion and presentation. So hopefully, you know, Hembrick and Mashinda and Ra, you guys are there to contribute to that, because I think it's very important the way we present ourselves in public, you know, and the takeaways from, you know, the results of being seen in public a certain way and with your dress. So that'll be very interesting. Professor Rye, anything next week?
Well, no, I'll talk to Brother Joe about it. I'll call you tomorrow.
Okay. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody have a good evening.
All right.